Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where Bobby Wagner is one of the host's favorite linebackers, really because his name has the word wag in it. I have used that one before, guys, but I'm bringing it back today because our special guest is Bobby Wagner. Yes, he is here. He joined us for an interview. He graciously took questions from me and one from Lenny. It was a ton of fun. I really enjoyed it, so give it a listen. Bobby, how's it going?
It's going really good. What about yourself?
I'm doing good. So you are in Seattle right now. Let's just start here. What is your quarantine life like? How is your off-season program going? How much free time do you have? What's happening?
It's been good. You know, I work out, then I read, do a couple business stuff, chill with the family. I just chill, man. Honestly, I think, you know, I feel like we always like ask for a moment to like freeze the world and be able to kind of focus on some things. So, I'm kind of using it like that. It's an unfortunate way. I wouldn't have wanted it to come this way. But you just try to find a positive in it.
Are you guys doing like Zoom meetings with everybody saw the Will Ferrell thing that went viral, do you like the linebackers? Are you having, I don't know, like what we're doing? Are you talking right now?
Yeah, we're doing Zoom meetings. You know how Coach Carroll is, you know, he's done a great job trying to make it kind of exactly like how it would have been if we were to come in. So it's just the virtual version of kind of what we already do. So it's been, you know, first couple of weeks have been pretty good.
I imagine that's a lot easier for you than like a rookie, right? Coming in to this off season, not being able to have mini camp or OTAs or anything, just having to learn via the internet.
Yeah, it's going to be hard for them to learn, but you know, we're going to do our best to try to, you know, kind of help them. You know, it's hard to learn the playbook, but once you get out there on the field, it tends to make the learning a little bit better. So they don't really have that. So they're going to have to really do their best. You know, us as veterans are going to have to, you know, make sure we make ourselves available for any questions they may have and, you know, kind of just go from there. It's new for everybody. So we're just trying to figure this out.
So I wanted to start actually with your rookie season and kind of talk a little bit about your career in Seattle, which is now, you're going into ninth season, right? So 2012, which is crazy, by the way, when you look at that draft, because your first, second, and third picks are all on the team now with Bruce back.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Surreal. That draft, the infamous D-plus grade on that draft.
I think it was an F.
An F, okay.
I think Somebody gave us an F. I remember, I think we did something a couple years ago where they showed us what they said and what they graded us and our reactions.
Well, so Irvin, that pick was criticized. Wilson, you know, no one really thought anything would come of it. But you, I feel like I remember at the time, were being projected to go around there coming out of Utah State, having a lot of success there. But going into Utah State, you were not a highly touted recruit, as I recall. Like, that was not seen to be in the cards for you, right?
Mm-mm. Yeah, when I – honestly, they were my – Utah State was my only offer. And, you know, I come to find out later on, my coach kind of had talked them into, you know, flying me out and offering, maybe, stressed the truth out a little bit. But, you know, I kind of just, once I got to Utah State, I felt like all I needed was an opportunity. And, you know, I felt like it was a good program to, you know, try to turn around. Me and Robert Turbin, which we end up, you know, being drafted by the same team. So that ended up working out for us. So, honestly, at the end of the day, like I look back now and just realize like none of those statistics, stars, none of that matters, you know, if you can't play football on the field. So it's a lot of 5-star recruits that haven't made it either.
Why were you 2-star recruit, right? Like, why was that? Cause it's not, you were from LA, you know, it's not like you were from the middle of nowhere.
Well, I still had aspirations of being a basketball player at the time.
Okay.
I was still thinking that I was going to be 6'8", and that didn't necessarily work out for me. So once I, you know, I had a couple of my teammates and, you know, my coaches were really influential on, like, having me really just focus on football and, you know, put the basketball down. So once I did that, I kind of did it late, but, you know, I had some teams come and, you know, Utah State was the ones that actually pulled the trigger.
So when you came to Seattle, the bones of that legendary defense were already in place. Earl was there. Cam was there. Sherman mm-hmm. was 2011, right? The year before he was drafted.
Yeah, he was there. Yep.
I guess not Cliff and Mike came in free agency, but for the most part, a lot of the, you know, now extremely famous players were already there. Was that intimidating to you walking into that unit, or given that it was a pretty young defense, did you kind of feel like you were growing with them?
I think it was a, you know, growing with them feel because, you know, even though those guys were there and I knew of them, you know, I think Sherman was like 23, Cam was like 24, Earl was probably 24 as well, and I was coming in 21. So it wasn't like they were that much older than me where we couldn't really connect. You know, I feel like sometimes guys go into a, you know, organization or a team where it's, you know, a lot of the leaders are 29, 30 plus. It's kind of hard to relate. So I felt like we just grew together and, you know, they accepted me for who I was. It was easy for them to, you know, especially for guys like KJ and Sherm to kind of like tell me, you know, what I could expect as a rookie since they just did it. And so, you know, it's just fun. You know, we connected everybody. We naturally, it almost felt like college. We just started hanging out and got close and that translation on the field.
What was Richard Sherman like at the very beginning?
He was who he was, man. He was the same person he always been. He was, you know, challenging you, you know, challenging, you know, your viewpoint of on any situation, whether it's sports, football, anything. But, you know, I feel like we got to see, you know, a different side, you know, a caring side, a chill, relaxed side, sometimes quiet side that people didn't really see from the outside looking in.
I think one thing that also strikes me about playing your particular position and coming, you know, joining the NFL at that time, 2012, it was also sort of the period that marked the rise of a very specific type of quarterback and quarterback play. I mean, you remember with Russell coming into the league, RG3, Colin Kaepernick, the read option for like really came into vogue those first 2 years that you were playing the particular position that, you know, in some cases found that adjustment challenging. What was it like for you joining the NFL at a time and playing that style of quarterback?
I thought it was pretty easy. Like I said, I had guys that you know, welcomed me. You know, I had a coach in Ken Norton Jr. that really, you know, helped me understand what the middle linebacker's job was, being the quarterback of the defense, and something that I accepted. And then, too, I was lucky because, you know, it was kind of more of a college offense. So the read zone was something that I kind of saw in college, and they just brought it to the league. And so it wasn't too foreign for me to figure out, but just to figure out the type of things they were doing because, you know, NFL was doing it, but it was doing a lot more complex version. And so,
yeah,
you know, I just felt like at the end of the day, I try to simplify the game as much as possible. As soon as the ball is high, go try to find it as fast as you can. So, yeah, I had fun.
You're making it sound a lot simpler than, I mean, because being the quarterback of the defense, you know, your responsibilities, especially, again, facing that sort of misdirection and complexity, it's not easy.
Yeah, I mean, but like I said, I still remember the first time I came in the huddle. I'm staring at Earl, Sherm, Cam, KJ, Brandon Meebang, Leroy Hill, all those guys. And I go and try to call the play. And I think it was Earl that told me, where's his neck? And then they start asking why I don't have no neck and, you know, make it fun. And so, like, they made it fun and they made the adjustment for me pretty easy. And you know, accepted me, allowed a rookie to, you know, kind of call a show for a little bit and you know, I respected them. So it wasn't easy, but, you know, when you have guys like that, it's not as bad.
Was it easier then to play that style of offense that's a little bit more college style, or sort of quarterbacks, like more of the, you know, pocket passers in the NFL when you, some of the veterans that you ended up playing that first year?
I think, you know, those style of quarterbacks are always, you know, in my opinion, the hardest to face because you know that they have the ability to stay in the pocket and you know they have the ability to lead a pocket. And, you know, you don't want guys like Russell leaving the pocket. And especially, you know, what he does is leave the pocket. The moment somebody kind of tries to run and catch him, he throws it over your head 50 yards for a touchdown. So for me, I feel like the guys that can do both are always the one that you worry about. But there are, you know, there are good ones that can sit in the pocket and kind of pick you apart. But as a defender, you know, you have to be on your A game, both running them down and you know, in the pass game.
I feel like you in particular in Seattle, you are in a division where you play a lot of coaches in particular, where I feel like they spend all of their time trying to make life difficult for linebackers. Shanahan, McVay, mm-hmm. Like, don't you feel like Kyle Shanahan is just dreaming of ways to get mismatches on you or to use misdirection to make your life miserable? How difficult is it dealing with that level of confusion and misdirection on offense that we're seeing so much lately in the NFL?
It's really difficult, especially from those two guys. You know, you have so much respect for them. You know, you come out there and, you know, your keys say that, you know, when they do pullers or anything like that, follow the pullers. But, you know, those guys will have a puller with a running back toss with a receiver running one way. And it just really tests your discipline. And, you know, that's where your film study come in. You know, they put those plays on film, so you got to, you know, watch it. But, you know, even those guys come up with a unique play for just your team. And so it's fun. It really challenges your intellect as a football player. I have a fun trying to dissect and figure it out. There's been plays that I feel like I figured out pretty quick, and there's been plays that didn't really go so well. So it's really fun. I think it makes the game fun, you know, watching them guys probably draw up anything that comes in their head and trying to figure it out.
What is something you can do now that you couldn't do earlier in your career?
I think I have a, you know, slowing the game down was something that, you know, coming in, it was talked about, but I didn't really understand how to do that. And I feel like as I got older, you know, the game is so slow. You know, I'm processing things so quick, and I don't think I was doing that when I first got into the league. And you just see it. You know, you watch older guys like Ray Lewis and all those guys, and you see they don't take a lot of steps. All their steps are precise. It's because they know where the ball is going. And so, you know, I think I'm a lot more patient than I was, you know, when I was a rookie. You know, back in, when you were a rookie, you just running out there trying to make plays. But now you understand where the ball is going, and you try to beat them there.
The Seahawks play a lot more base defense than the rest of the NFL. I think that's obviously stems a little bit from the personnel you guys have, the linebacker group being sort of the strength of the team. In what ways has that been challenging given, you know, where offenses have gone over the last year, and how have you responded to that challenge?
I think from, you know, outside looking in, I think, you know, the challenges is like you said, you know, you got guys in our division that like to, you know, have mismatch with wide receivers on linebackers. So you see that is not as easy to get to, you know, or it's easy for them to get to that, you know, being we play so much base. And so just understanding how they will attack, you know, us and look at our fronts or look at, you know, our personnel and how we're going to attack them. But, you know, I feel like we have smart linebackers, and I feel like we have fast linebackers. And I think that's kind of where the league is going. If you're watching, you know, linebackers are getting faster and faster, and, you know, they're not as big as they once were. You know, guys probably back in a little bit before when I was there, you know, guys are like 250, 260, and you don't really see that as much. Now, you know, guys like 240 and below. And so that's kind of how you combat it. You know, you just got to be, you know, fast and think smart and understand, you know, how they're going to attack you. And you know, I feel like we've done a decent job.
I want to ask about something else I noticed this season in particular. After games, you were wearing HBCU sweatshirts, I think after almost every game, if I'm right. Can you explain your thinking behind that?
Yeah, I was wearing them after every road game, and I just wanted to shed light on them. At first, it kind of just started off as I wanted hoodies, and I was thinking about taking a business school, taking a business course at Stanford and at Harvard, and I thought, like, why doesn't more people try to, you know, do those business classes at HBCUs? And after I started researching and you know, really diving in and understanding, you know, I started to order hoodies, and then I wanted to, you know, find a way to kind of, you know, put them on the map. And I kind of found out I was up for the Walter Payton Man of the Year. and I decided to donate the money that I was going to receive to the HBCU Foundation. And so it just kind of became a thing where I was just wearing hoodies just to kind of shed light on universities that I feel should, you know, be thought about prestigiously.
You mentioned this stemmed from you thinking about taking a business class or looking into business programs. Is that something you want to pursue after football?
Yeah, that's something, you know, I got my degree in that. It's something that I've, you know, I've had a lot of good mentors challenge me to think about what is something I wanted to do after I'm done playing football. And so a lot of majority of my offseason I spent interning at different businesses, learning different things that I can, and, you know, hopefully making that transition into the next world look pretty good.
You negotiated your own marketing deal with Jordan Brand, and then your current contract, a 3-year, $54 million deal with the Seahawks, which, you know, there was a lot of attention paid to Richard Sherman negotiating his deal. But when your deal was reported, I actually didn't see many people point out, hey, Bobby Wagner did this too, kind of almost flew under the radar a little bit. So I wanted to ask you why you did it, why you went about, you know, doing the deal your own way instead of having an agent do it.
I think it stemmed from just, you know, I really challenged myself to learn the business. And I think in learning the business, you know, I felt like there was an opportunity for me to kind of show that players are smarter than people give them credit for. And, you know, I felt like business was something I wanted to do, you know, when I'm done. And if I wasn't willing to take a chance on myself, I probably wasn't going to take a chance, you know, when I was done playing football. So I felt like it was the right time for me to do it. I felt like I was prepared to do it. I had studied a lot prior to going into negotiations. And so the time and opportunity was just right for me. It's something that I wanted to do. I feel like I encourage players to, even if they don't take the same route that I took, but to understand the business that we're in, because, you know, a lot of us don't walk away with what we can, you know, what we earn. And so we got to do a better job. And I think that starts from the knowledge of, you know, how sometimes we can get taken advantage of, and really being mindful of ourselves, our business, and treating ourselves as like an enterprise.
So when you see deals reported now, you know, at first, and it's the total money and it's not the guarantees and maybe there's an injury guarantee, are you always looking at them and thinking, all right, let's waiting to get all the details?
Yeah, you got to. I mean, at the end of the day, like, they put it out to make it look good at first. And so once they put the deal out, you got to see whether it is what it says it is or is it not. And so I've always been kind of into that, especially, you know, my previous deals. You know, I wanted to, you know, when I negotiated my deal, I wanted it to be something that people respected and somebody, you know, like, you couldn't really pick apart. And so I felt like I did that. And like you said, it kind of fell on the radar, because I don't know if they want players to do that for themselves, you know, and, you know, we can kind of leave it at that. But I don't think they
certainly
want.
Certainly agents don't.
Agents don't, for sure. There's a lot of people that don't. And so I think that's probably why, you know, you want to keep their business going, which, you know, I have nothing against their business. I feel like there's a lot of agents out there that do a great job, but there's a lot of agents that don't.
Sure.
And so, you know, when you saw Sherm do his deal and he got criticized a lot, you rarely see agents get criticized, you know, when they're done doing their deal, whether it's a good deal or a bad deal. And so I found it interesting, but at the end of the day, it worked out for me, and hoping that guys learn the business that we in so we can really make an impact when we're done.
Now that I think about it, it's you, Sherman, Russell Okung, like something in the water in Seattle. A lot of free thinkers come out of that
team. A lot of free
thinkers,
man. You know how the world think about free thinkers.
I guess Seattle seems to be okay with them.
We had a lot of guys that were very different on our team. So
yeah.
They impressed me.
How did that happen?
I don't know. They just did a really good job of picking people that were kind of like-minded and wanted more than just to be good football players.
I want to talk to you a little bit about legacy. So 2015, Tony Dungy voted for you for MVP. I think you are a future Hall of Famer. I think you are the best middle linebacker of the last 10 years. Don't at me, Panthers fans. I don't care.
I appreciate you.
But you had to be a little bit surprised to get that MVP vote, right?
A little bit, because I feel like they don't really value defenders when it comes to that award. It doesn't matter how great of a season somebody has. You look at a guy like Aaron Donald, the amount of sacks that he had and the presence that he has on the football field. And, you know, you knew he was having an amazing season, but you knew that wasn't going to be an award that he was going to take home, because it typically goes right to a quarterback. And I don't think the last person that I think did it was Lawrence Taylor back in like 86. And so, yes, you know, I think at some point, you know, defense will get some love, but I was very grateful when I see it.
It's funny though, you say that, and I believe Russell Wilson has never received an MVP vote, even this season. I don't think he got any.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I don't really know what goes into, you know, the voting process, but I feel like he's had some amazing seasons and done some amazing things. So, you know, hopefully he'll get his time, and hopefully that's something that he'll come. You know, again, I don't know what goes into that, but I definitely feel like he's a guy that deserves to be looked at for that award.
Do you think he's underrated?
If you would have asked me that maybe a couple years ago, I feel like they didn't appreciate, you know, his talents as much. But I think, you know, especially the last few years, I think people are starting to realize how great of a quarterback he is and how much, you know, he does for our offense, and, you know, really appreciating what he does on the football field from, you know, running and throwing. Because at first, you know, a lot of people don't really – it was all about passing. They didn't really appreciate the running. And then now I feel like it's starting to change, because you're starting to see more quarterbacks do both really, really well. And so I'm hoping that he gets his just due.
Who's the quarterback who nobody properly appreciates how mobile they are? And you would know, as, you know, facing them in that regard.
I would say probably Aaron Rodgers. I would say.
Would you say he's sneaky athletic? Is he deceptively quick, Bobby?
I don't know if it's sneaky. I think if you know, us football players, you watch, he takes off and he's able to gain some yards, and you know, you respect it. But I think,
especially early in his career, I'd say.
Yeah, he would be a guy that you're, you know, if, you know, because you're so worried about, you know, how well he passes, sometimes you leave him with space and he picks up, you know, 15 yards really quickly. So he's a guy that you got to kind of pay attention, and don't let the arm fool you that he can take off too.
Yeah. I mean, even this draft, do you like college football? Do you watch a lot?
I don't anymore. I used to watch it. I don't pay attention to it anymore. Once they put the targeting rule in and they start kicking kids out and making them miss halves and stuff like that, I just couldn't watch it.
I was going to say Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow. I think, I don't know if either of them are on your schedule, but they're both pretty quick, but everyone's good. Yeah. Well, you're not going to hear about that. They're very fast, but.
I can't tell you. I find out about college players when I hear them.
Well, what about, I have to ask on behalf of Seahawks fans, you know, Seattle surprised a lot of people by taking an off-ball linebacker in the first round, and his coach said he coached you, and that, I'm talking about Jordan Brooks, and that he reminded him of you. So what can you tell us about – I know you're not watching Texas Tech, but what can you tell us about him and how he might be an addition to the Seahawks team this season?
Yeah, I think Matt Wells was the – he was our quarterback's coach when I was there. So Coach Anderson is the one that coached me, and Coach Klune coached me. But, I mean, he saw me, so he would have an idea. But – you know, I think, you know, a lot of people were surprised by it. But at the end of the day, you want to pick the best position. And I feel like it's kind of, you know, hopefully a good sign that people are starting to value the linebacker position, value the off-the-ball linebacker position. So,
yeah,
I'm supporting it. You know, I'm excited to have him on the team. I'm excited to, you know, bring him in. And, again, you know, he's like we talked about before, you know, we're going to try to help him the best we can, because we don't get to be around him like normal. And so – once we, you know, hopefully this thing kind of clears and we're able to kind of get back when everything is safe, I know myself and KJ will gladly take him under our wing and tell him everything that we know. Because at the end of the day, you know, we want everybody to be successful, and we want everybody to be able to provide for their families.
Yeah, and he might get to see the field in another role, maybe at Sam or something, right? So
Yeah, we'll figure it out. You know, once you get everybody in, you know what I mean?
You can see how it's in person.
Yeah.
I just kind of want to wrap on the football stuff just by asking you a little bit about the linebacker position. And, you know, because at this point, I think in your career, we're starting to think about it in the context of history, like, you know, I've been saying. And it's a position, I think, that the importance in the eyes of the league has evolved a lot, even in your 8 or so seasons. Mm-hmm. Who do you really, like, who are the linebackers, when all said and done, that you'd like to be regarded in that category and compared to?
You know, the greats, obviously. You know, the recent inductees like Ray Lewis, Brian Urlacher. You know, I've loved watching Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman when they were playing. You know, Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs when they were playing were people that I enjoyed watching. So hopefully, you know, when all is said and done, you know, you want to be in that, not only in that, like, looked upon in that regard, but, you know, the guys that are coming up to respect your game and respect how you play the game and want to elevate the position because of how you played it. So that's kind of how I look at it. You know, you hopefully that you in that class. You know, I think Ray Lewis, Patrick Willis, Navarro Bowman were a lot of the guys that I watched. And so, you know, getting respect from those guys has always meant a lot to me.
I know you said you want to go into business, but would you ever coach?
I don't think coaching is something I do. When I'm walking away from the game, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, rest in peace, Kobe. But, you know, I admired the way that he kind of did it. You know, he went full throttle, gave basketball everything that he had. And, you know, when he walked away from the game, he walked away. And the only thing that brought him back was his kids. And so that's kind of how I look at it. I don't know if I'll be a coach when I'm done, because I just have different ambitions that I like to kind of put my energy into.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
All right. We always wrap with 5 questions, 4 from me. 1 is from Lenny. I apologize in advance. It's usually offensive.
Okay. We'll see.
He asked KJ about that batted ball, and KJ denied that he knew the rule. I don't know if you remember that. The infamous line. Was it the Lions game where KJ batted the ball into the end zone?
I think it was. I think Cam... Right, Cam hit somebody.
No, it was KJ. Somebody. And then in America pretended like they knew the rule.
Yeah, but somebody hit it to pop out, right?
Oh, no, yeah, Cam hit. Yes.
Yeah, and then KJ hit it out, yeah. I don't think we knew that rule. We didn't know that rule.
Everybody was like, oh, the Seahawks break the rules again. And yeah, everyone was like, come
easy.
On.
It's
like,
easy because we're on the field and everybody has their phone. They can look up the rule and you know, we didn't know. Obviously, they didn't know either because they wouldn't have called it. Or they would have called it if they knew.
We played the Fail Mary game on Monday night. I don't know if you caught that on ESPN. Or as I call it, the totally legitimate touchdown game.
I mean, it was a touchdown to me.
You know, it's fun to watch that game because what people forgot is you guys terrorized Aaron Rodgers in that game.
Yeah, 8 sacks in the first half.
That's got to be the only time in Russell Wilson's career he's ever been out-sacked 8-1.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was a crazy game. I watched it too, and I was watching. Like, I forgot that we had that many sacks.
Chris Clemons, man. He was a beast in that game. All right, first question. Which Ninja Turtle are you?
Raphael.
Explain why. For those who don't know, Bobby Wagner, longtime TNMT aficionado. I don't know if you still are.
I love them. wasn't too happy with the movies that came out recently, but.
Are you an animated series guy?
I mean, I like the more older, the 90s ones, where they actually kind of look like the cartoon. Yeah. These ones didn't really look like cartoons that I saw before. I think the first one, they were like 6'8" or like 7'8". And it kind of made him a little shorter in the second one. But Raphael, I just like his – he's very sarcastic. I like I am pretty sarcastic. I like to – you know, the way he kind of approaches it, attacks to his mindset, I just like – and I like my favorite color is red, so.
There you go. Cartoon is the one with the theme song that slapped really hard. I don't know if you remember. Yes. It has like the – which one is KJ?
KJ would probably be Donatello.
That seems about right. I would go with KJ that. What about Donatello. P. Carroll?
P. Carroll probably have to be probably Splinter because he's the head coach.
So he also has kind of a Splinter vibe, actually.
Yeah, you know.
I'm with that. Okay, second question. Everyone wants to get recommendations for stuff to watch on TV in the quarantine. What are you watching right now?
I'm watching.
That's good.
I watched For Life.
Oh, yeah.
It's a show that comes on ABC. I watched that. Right. I wasn't in the Ozark. I watched the first two episodes, and then I cut it off. And then the third season came out, and everybody was just talking about how great it was. So I watched it again, and then I became a huge fan. So I watched all of it. Ozark is definitely one. I like to watch documentaries. I like to listen to people like speak, like Nipsey, Jay-Z, you know, different people like that. So that's probably what I'm doing.
You mentioned also at the very beginning of the show, I should have followed, that you've been reading a lot. Have you read anything good that you'd recommend to people?
I just read Chop Wood, Carry Water. I thought that was a pretty good book.
Yeah.
I'm reading a book on Reginald Lewis. I read the book Discovering the Power Within. One of my favorites is The Seed of the Soul. Seven Decisions is a good one, too. So
wow.
That should be...
You're big on self-improvement. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I see why you and Pete Carroll get along.
I mean, he got a lot of books. He wrote with books, so hopefully.
Win forever.
Yeah.
Third question. We kind of touched on this, but I want to name. Who's the hardest quarterback in the NFL to face right now?
And I can't say Russell.
You can't say Russell, yeah, obviously.
I would probably say Lamar is the one that pops out first.
I mean,
he's pretty good.
That was a tough game to watch.
Yeah, he's pretty fast.
I actually wanted to ask you along those lines, just really quickly. How like, you know, because we've been talking a lot about whether teams use two quarterbacks, like a Taysom Hill, or like how will the Eagles use Jalen Hurts. As a defender, as fans, I think people get really annoyed when that, like, they're like, really, why are you going to take Drew Brees off the field? Are you really going to do kind of this trickery? As a defender, though, how challenging is that when Taysom Hill is on the field, for example?
It's challenging from a, like, preparation standpoint because, don't know how much they're going to use him. You know, it could be one play, it could be 10 plays. And so I think it works well for them because they're really two different quarterbacks. You know, Drew Brees is more of a pocket passer, sit in the pocket, pick you apart. You know, Hill is more of a – he does it all, man. He's a receiver. He's a tight end. He's a quarterback. You really have to know where he's at. And so I know a lot of teams are maybe trying to think about that, but you have to really have two different quarterbacks for a defender to really really be worried about it. If you have two of the same kind, then the offense is not going to change too much. Yeah.
I feel like you guys have played the Panthers approximately 45 times over the last six or seven years. It's actually really annoying.
There's no opponent.
It's very irritating. But I got to ask, like, are you surprised that Cam Newton doesn't have a job right now?
I'm very surprised. You know, I think, if anybody else with his pedigree is on the market, you know, him being an MVP, him leading the team to the Super Bowl, you know, the kind of threat that he kind of presents to a defense, I feel like they would be taken pretty quick. So, you know, maybe he's waiting for the right opportunity. Maybe he's had some offers. I don't know that per se, but I would be surprised if nobody picks him up.
Fourth question. I know you said you've been reading, you've been watching documentaries. What is a hobby you have that would, like, shock people? Or something you're interested in that you think people would be truly surprised to learn?
Shocked in? I don't know if I have something that people shock in. Maybe basketball, but people know I play basketball. I am a pool shark, you know, so anybody want to challenge me in pool, that's what I do. So
you're very good.
I mean, you know.
Oh, wow. Okay. We're seeing a pool table back there. Are you the best pool player on the Seahawks?
You know what? I haven't played too many people in pool. I say when people come to my house, it's rare that they win. So I don't know. I would have to like play more of my teammates to understand, but I would say I'm the top for sure.
Last question, as always, comes from Lenny. I didn't write it. I'm just reading it. Okay, I'm just a messenger. No, it's not. It's not. Okay. No, I already promised I wouldn't ask about a story on TMZ today. So
yeah,
that was his first suggestion. I'm sparing you that. He actually just wants to know if you can communicate something to Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer, and tell them to let Russell Wilson pass more. His exact words are, "Let Russ cook."
Yeah, I could do that. You know, I think I could do that. Tell him I'll send him a message. Yeah, tell him
it's a promise.
If he give me some pizza, I'll relay the message.
Listen,